You're listening to Eyes Closed in Prayer. I'm your host, Gwendolyn Glenn. Less than 24 hours after committing mass murder, Dylan Roof sat in an interrogation room in Shelby, North Carolina, where he was captured. Two FBI agents began questioning Roof.
Can you tell us about what happened last night?
I went to that church in Charleston,
There's a long pause, a short exchange, and then Roof says, With a confession quickly in hand, the agents began filling in details. How many bullets Roof brought with him? 77. The type of gun he used? A Glock 45. Roof drew the layout of the room showing where the parishioners were seated and described how he went around the room.
I was just sort of pacing around, because I was like freaking out a little bit too, It's not, there was pauses in between, and he was thinking about, what I should do and stuff. But I guess in a way.
For nearly 2 hours, Roof answered questions with a nonchalance more fitting someone describing a non-eventful night.
Or let's say that, say a black man walked into a church and killed 9 white people. What should happen to him?
You already know the answer. Just tell us. I can see by the look on your face you already have a thought. So what was your thought on that when he asked you?
Well, you should probably die too, I guess.
Dylan Roof is a racist, though he prefers the term white nationalist. And to Roof, symbols of white supremacy held power. The FBI agents found a picture of Roof wearing a jacket with patches of the Rhodesian and apartheid South African flags. They asked why.
Well, because they represent white people ruling in the homeland of Africans and ruling as minorities.
Ruling as minorities?
Yeah, that's powerful.
They also found an image with the numbers 14 and 88. 14 is the number of words in a racist credo Roof knows by heart.
We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's the 14 words, and 88 stands for Hail Hitler because it's H-H.
H is the 8th letter of the alphabet. Roof's understanding of the power of symbols is also why he chose Mother Emanuel. A chance encounter let him know when he should strike. On an earlier trip to Charleston, Roof talked to a parishioner outside the church.
I just asked him, I said, when is the church service? And then she told me the church service and the Bible study or something like that, the times or something.
Was that an African American?
The internet taught him the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church was an historic black church, a powerful symbol of a community he despised.
This is a church that is not only well established, but was very, very instrumental in the abolitionist movement, was very instrumental in trying to push against the Jim Crow, and also was very instrumental in the civil rights movement.
Herb Frazier is co-author of We Are Charleston, a book which chronicles the history of Mother Emanuel, known by that name since it was the first black church in the South.
Well, when the church was established, of course, it was in the presence of a slave-holding society. And so the idea of Africans being able to worship and meet on their own without some oversight and restrictions by the white authorities was sort of didn't fit in a slaveholding state. So they were subjected to raids, arrests, harassments, and eventually the church was forced to go underground to have clandestine meetings. And of course, one of their members was Denmark Vesey. Denmark Vesey in 1822 was accused of leading or attempting to lead a conspiracy to overthrow the white authorities, kill as many whites as he could here in Charleston. So that was the conspiracy. He was and his fellow co-conspirators were arrested, executed, and the church building was destroyed. The church went underground, and the church was not able to resurrect itself until after the Civil War. So that was the first tragedy that the church experienced.
And others?
After the church was established after the Civil War, the church was heavily damaged in 1886 during a very devastating earthquake. And a new building was built at the current site.
When you look at those past tragedies and when you look at this tragedy, do you see major differences in the effect on the church?
One tragedy, of course, was by the hand of man, and they overcame that. The other tragedy was the tragedy of Mother Nature, and they overcame this. This current tragedy, obviously, is by, again, the hand of man. We say in the book, we are confident that the resilience of the church has been displayed over the history of the church, and we are all very confident that the church will heal and will resurrect itself in the wake of this current tragedy.
It didn't take long for images of Dylann Roof posing with a Confederate flag to begin circulating, which is why 10 days after the massacre, one woman felt the need to do something.
It was very difficult because I couldn't tell my family what I was doing.
Bree Newsom is a civil rights activist who lives in Charlotte. Newsom and a friend drove to the South Carolina Capitol in Columbia, and in the early morning light, she scaled the flagpole and removed what she saw as a symbol of hate, the Confederate battle flag.
You come against me with hatred and oppression and violence. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today.
Not long after, Newsom described what went through her mind as she climbed the 30-foot pole. She spoke with reporter Sarah D'Elia.
Just very focused on the task of hand as I was climbing up, because I got to make sure that I'm safe. I wanted to make sure that, you know, everything was remaining as calm as possible. So I was constantly also talking with the police and just letting them know, like, this is a peaceful action. I didn't want anything to escalate. And then once I climbed up and unhooked the flag, I was first just taken aback at how simple it was to just unhook the flag and take it down. It's quite a simple act. And just really feeling this personal sense of triumph and of having overcome my own fears and the fears that, you know, had been aroused in me by the Charleston massacre and just by what this symbol represents.
What has surprised you the most?
I honestly didn't expect people to view it quite as historical, primarily because as soon as we were, you know, down in the jail, within 45 minutes, we were told that the flag was back up. So I was, you know, down in jail assuming that maybe it hadn't made much of an impact at all or much of a statement at all. And so then once I got out and saw how much it had resonated with people, I was really kind of surprised, honestly.
There's been a range of reactions to you scaling the flagpole and bringing down the flag. And some of them have been positive. A lot of them have been positive, especially locally here. Some have been negative. And some have been kind of in the middle. There are a couple of tweets that I want to read. One is from Senator Marlon Kimson of Charleston, and he said, there are two ways the Confederate flag can be removed forever. Citizens, please enact legally or we lose. How do you react to those tweets? I mean, was this the right thing to do?
Quite frankly, to be blunt, that's a bit like saying that Rosa Parks, by refusing to get up from her seat, was making it harder to integrate the buses. I mean, that's just, I don't support that logic at all.
Which leads us to an irony in Dylann Roof's crimes. He hoped it would start a race war. Instead, it accomplished something decades of protest and boycotts could not. A month after the killings, the Confederate battle flag was permanently removed from the grounds of South Carolina's Capitol. Reporter Tom Bullock watched as it came down.
The flag ceremony was due to begin at 10 a.m. It ran a little late, and some of the crowd of more than 1,000 grew restless. Regina Brittingham was watching it all.
It's just good to see everybody of all race, religion, come together, and that makes you feel good.
Brittingham was there with four generations of her family to witness something they'd long hoped would happen. Not far away stood Joy Jackson, draped in a Confederate flag.
I do not think that flag should come down. It wasn't about slavery to begin with, and it should not come down. But at least I can do is come wear the flag to represent my grandfather.
Who was injured, she says, fighting for the Confederacy and what he believed in. At 10:05, both Jackson and Brittingham watched as seven members of the South Carolina Highway Patrol Honor Guard, wearing crisp gray uniforms, silently marched to the foot of the state capitol building. They turned left in formation, marched across the grass of the capitol grounds. Then, ceremonially, they lowered the Confederate flag, folded it, and marched it away to be placed in a nearby museum. People then began another chant. And that was it. No speeches, no politicians, no bands. But the simple ceremony belies the importance of the event.
I think it's a very big deal. It's been a contested issue for virtually my entire lifetime as a native South Carolinian.
Lacey Ford teaches history at the University of South Carolina. He, too, watched the furling of the Confederate battle flag today and the flurry of political activity in the past few weeks that made it possible.
The modern flying of the Confederate flag on the Capitol Dome began in 1961 with a commemoration of the Civil War centennial in South Carolina. And I believe that the original intent was that the flag would be up there during the four-year centennial and then be taken down. But as we all know, that's not the way it ended up.
Because the Civil War centennial coincided with the Civil Rights Movement, Ford says there are bigger issues than the flag. He says removing it is an important symbol, but it doesn't end racism.
I would not go so far to say that we're beyond it or past it or that it won't claim its victims in the future and that unfairness and inequality won't continue to exist and have to be struggled against.
For some, that struggle has made them activists, their groups made famous on social media. Others, like artist Sonia Clark, felt the need to do something more tangible. In a piece titled Unraveling, Clark shows people how long it takes to deconstruct a complicated symbol of American history. Reporter Sarah D'Elia has her story.
Much of Clark's work is focused on civil rights issues and struggles. Her piece Unraveling takes the Confederate flag and its complicated history head on. With the help of family members, friends, and even strangers, Clark sat in front of it and slowly unraveled the flag. It's a tedious task. Partially intact and partially in threads, the flag hangs at the Mixed Greens Gallery in New York. Clark says it looks like it's slowly coming undone.
Most people don't really think about how cloth is woven. And then secondly, this cloth is woven and then pieced together to make the Confederate flag. So, you know, there's a white cloth that is stitched to a blue cloth that is stitched to a red cloth, and then stars are stitched on top. When people were unraveling it with me, they were sort of understanding the complexity of cloth itself, which I think is akin to understanding the complexity of the history of racism in our nation.
I've heard you describe this process of unraveling the Confederate flag as a somewhat meditative one, and I was hoping you could share a little bit more about that.
This is an incredibly contentious symbol, especially with the shootings in South Carolina. I wish this work weren't as relevant as it is, but it is as relevant as it is. And that's heartbreaking, but it just is evidence that there's more work to be done and more work that has to be done at many levels.
Let me ask you a question that we've been contemplating a lot in Charlotte, and people in South Carolina have been contemplating even more. Where is the most appropriate place for a Confederate flag to be?
I have to agree with the president on this one. I think that to get rid of all Confederate flags would be an erasure of our history, and we would be destined to repeat it. In fact, we're not doing so good at not repeating it right now. So I believe that the Confederate flag belongs in museums. I've lived in Richmond now for about 10 years. And quite recently, I went to the Museum of the Confederacy. One of the photographs that I took in the museum was of a threadbare Confederate flag, and it was behind glass. So here was this threadbare silk Confederate flag with my black female face reflected in a mirror of the glass that was protecting the flag. And that actually compelled me in part to start this project. So yes, they belong in museums. And well, obviously I think they belong in some artworks too.
Speaking with her a year later, she says she's gotten a lot of feedback about her work, some of it good.
There are some people who really understood the metaphor that I was working on.
And some negative.
And then there were people who were really hateful in terms of their response to the work, as if by taking a flag apart thread by thread was tantamount to killing an already dead ancestor.
Clark says she got called every name you could imagine. This negative response did not surprise her. After all, she's unraveling perhaps the most contentious piece of cloth in American history. The Confederate flag used in unraveling is cotton, common material used in Civil War battle flags. Cotton itself, of course, has its own complicated history, being a cash crop picked by slaves. As an African-American artist who lives in Richmond, the capital of the Confederacy, she wondered what would it be like to unravel a nylon flag, a more durable material used in flags today. What resulted from that curiosity was a piece called Untitled, a completely unraveled nylon Confederate flag that hangs limply from a flagpole attached to a wall in her studio.
You're still left with a very, very distinct flag. So that even though it's been unraveled, the image of the battle flag of the Confederacy is very much present. So, I guess that is timely.
Even though it's the same action of unraveling, the unraveling of the Confederate symbol in modern material sends a different message.
The nylon is easy to unravel, but the image, because of the modern material, has more staying power than the cotton. Insert your own artistic interpretation here.
The murders at Mother Emanuel and the aftermath will invariably mean different things to different people. Some will see it as a hate crime, a powerful moment of forgiveness, a grim reminder of what it means to be Black in America. Standing at Mother Emanuel's pulpit eulogizing the slain pastor who had long shepherded this flock, President Barack Obama told the country he hoped the deaths would not be in vain.
For too long, we've been blind to the way past injustices continue to shape the present.
That's right.
Perhaps we see that now. Perhaps this tragedy causes us to ask some tough questions about how we can permit so many of our children to languish in poverty or attend dilapidated schools or grow up without prospects for a job or for career. Perhaps it causes us to examine what we're doing to cause some of our children to hate.
Some will heed this call, but there's something inevitable in tragedy. It's easy for people's attention to shift to the next tragedy, the next trial, the next time hate lashes out at humanity. Then as now, some will try to make sense of the senseless with their eyes closed in prayer. This program was written and produced by Tom Bullock with reporting by Sarah D'Elia and Mark Rumsey. Special thanks to Alexandra Olgan of South Carolina Public Radio. The show was edited by Greg Collard. I'm Gwendolyn Glynn.